Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form 10 Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everyone, and good evening, and welcome to a June the 12th, Tuesday night, with the AMAA Masters in Radio Pioneers Blog and Radio Network. We're so happy to be in your home this evening on a Tuesday evening and talk about sport karate and all the neat stuff that's going on in America. We've got a really great show tonight. We've got to talk about a lot of cool subjects, a lot of cool things, and I've got a very, very special guest that I'm going to be bringing on here in just a few minutes. But right off the bat, my producer tonight, Hutch Jesse Bowen, shared with me that I got to do some more promos. And that means that anybody out there that loves sport karate, that knows what we do through the Sport Karate Museum, would like to do a opening promo for the radio show, and that you live that history of the say between 1960 to, say, 1990, give Hutch Jesse Bowen a call. And if you have a voice for radio, we'd love to hear your promo and introduce the radio show. We really would. We want a involvement of the public to be involved with our radio program. So please contact Hauntie Jesse Bowen. And by the way, speaking of Hauntie Jesse Bowen, you know, the book now is The Legends and Pioneers and Masters of the Martial Arts. And it's really going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to go ahead and jump the gun here and advertise the event August the 3rd. In Washington, D.C., and it's going to be a special group of people celebrating the book itself, but also it's behind Dennis Brown's tournament, the U.S. Capitol Classics, the NASCAR event, and special guests are going to be there, Dan Severin. That's right, the beast from the UFC, he's going to be there. Cynthia Rothrock, the Queen of Cinema, Tyler O'Brien is renewing the 80s. You know, people say this, and I believe it. The greatest woman fighter to ever live, Linda Denny, will be there. And probably the greatest traditional traditional flatbokata performer ever. And that's John Chung. He'll be there, too, as a special guest. And really exciting for this next gentleman, Dana Abbott. And tonight, we're going to be introducing something that he introduced a couple weeks ago, and it's going to be a big surprise. He's known as a samurai, and he'll be the special guest also. This is August the 3rd, Washington, D.C. For more information, please contact Jesse Bowen. And please understand, this is going to be a really, really fun event. It's something you really don't want to miss. And for more information, contact him personally. He'd like to talk to you. You know, tonight's guest is a very special guest because this is a guy that kind of grew up under a legend. And we're talking about Mr. Joe Louis, rest in peace. We lost Mr. Louis a few years back. But, you know, the Sport Karate Museum, a lot of my friends, we always wondered, what and who did he pass on his knowledge to? Well, I found a Joe Louis protege, and the gentleman's name is Carl Nepovics. That's right, Nepovics. And when you think of Mr. Joe Louis, you think of, you know, the greatest heavyweight karate fighter who ever lived. And you think of who was, you know, his first influences to make him great and the icon he has become in the martial arts family. Now, who did he pass on his greatness to? And who did he take under his wings to pass on the knowledge that he had? You know, seminars were cool. I mean, they lasted maybe an hour, right? And knowledge, and then, you know, he's gone. But, you know, Carl was with him from the time he was 13 years old until his passing. That's right. And we will talk about the old days and what was it like to be Mr. Louis. You know, what was he really like? And how much did he learn from that, you know, pugilist master of Okinawan karate, as we know him, as the fans know him as Mr. Louis, a great karate champion. You know, his first project of cybersecurity, or his new project of cybersecurity around the world, and being a CEO of one of the largest cybersecurity businesses in America, Carl is really changing things. You know, he's really stepped up from just being a karate instructor. And we'll talk about that too. You know, we'll also talk about the upcoming Joe Louis Eternal Awards this week in Atlanta, Georgia, and what that means to the karate community. And what was it like living with Mr. Louis, and what was eventually led him to becoming godfather to Chris's son? Carl. This year at the Living Legends, 26th of September, Carl received from the Sports Karate Museum the Joe Louis Dragon Image Fighting Award, given once a year. You know, lots of history in this Parts Unknown radio interview with myself. You know, I'm very lucky to be able to do this with these people. At this time, I'd like to introduce my dear friend, Carl DePolis. Carl, are you there, sir?
I'm here, sir. How are you?
Welcome to the show, Carl. Thank you for letting me ask you some deep questions about your mentor. And you have a really deep story, and I appreciate you sharing that with me tonight.
All right. What can I do for you?
Well, I like to do this, first of all. I like to share with my listeners, how did you get started, and what year did you make black belt, and how did Mr. Louis influence you in the beginning part of your life?
Well, I started karate in 1968. I was a young kid in Liverpool, New York. I'm actually from Syracuse, outside of Syracuse. The Tracy's Karate Studio just opened up probably a year prior to that. Jim and L. Tracy started a large group of franchisees across the country, and this gentleman bought one, and I got involved in karate because my sister was going to do Barbizon modeling, I think that's what it was, and we had a contest of who was going to last the longest. Well, she lasted about 3 months, and I lasted 50 years. So I won the bet. But in the process of that, one day, you know, learning myself as a young kid, my instructor at the time was Lee Thompson and Jim Thompson. They're brothers. We both trained under, at the time, Mr. Ed Parker out in California. And someone told me one day, he says, this guy by the name of Joe Louis coming in. I'm like, oh, who's Joe Louis? I mean, I'm a young kid. I didn't know who Joe Louis was, my uncle. So a guy comes in, you know, nice looking dude, you know, muscular kind of guy, and, you know, just walk around and with a couple of people and shook my hand, asked me, you know, what I was doing. I'm like, I'm trying to learn karate. I was just like, you know, probably a yellow belt, I think, at the time. And that was my first experience. And later in life, around 1972, I became about 17, 18 years old. I moved to St. Louis, Missouri, because one of the owners there, Jim Thompson, got a franchise with Tracy's. And we moved to St. Louis. He became my stepbrother at the time. I told my mom and dad I wanted to go down there and go to school, and I want to get involved. And she said, go ahead. There's 10 of us, so she wouldn't miss me. Just left 9 more at home. So I get down there, and I go through the ranks to go to school. I'm still in high school and teaching. I was living in the karate school, actually, at the time. In a shopping center, and went to school every morning, came home in the afternoon, put my uniform on, and started to talk karate. And I was a brown belt at that point, getting ready to test my black belt, you know. So about a year into it, this guy again shows up, this guy named Joe Louis. And a young guy again, you know, he walks in the door, and he became the national director at the time of Tracy's organization. He's all over the country talking to all the new franchisees.
Okay, stop right there, Carl. Right there, because I want to share with my listeners. You can mention Tracy and explain to them who he was. Mr. Al Tracy and his brother opened up franchising schools around the country, and they were originally under Mr. Ed Parker, who is the founder of the American Kempo system that came from Hawaii to America. And that was a big organization, and my dear friend Roger Green, who, by the way, I want to mention, he's in the hospital, and my heart goes out to him and Karen right now. But Mr. Louis and Mr. Green and apparently yourself and other people involved with the Tracy organization, you guys had a familiar thing where you wore a checkered gi, correct?
Yes, sir. Like we all checkered gi.
And the story behind that, I understand, and we're going to go on with your test, but the story behind that wearing that checkered gi was because it was like an optical illusion for the other fighters to be mesmerized. Is that correct? Is that right?
Pretty pretty much what it was. It was just a distraction of, you know, you put it on, you look, you know, and it, the movement,
yeah.
You know, Joe designed the thing for where it just kind of, it kind of memorized you, kind of like, oh, my God, what's
wait a minute,
arm
wait a minute.
You
said Mr. Lewis designed it? Mr. Lewis designed
it? He designed it. Yes, he did.
Wow.
Joe designed it.
Cool, Carl. That's cool.
He designed
that's
that uniform
cool.
years ago.
Yeah.
So,
okay, now you're getting ready to get your black belt. Mr. Lewis shows up.
So
go on.
He comes in, and there's an entourage of people coming through because they're all in town. There's Al Tracy. There's Ray Klingenberg was in some part of the organization.
Y'all remember him.
Ted Mancuso was actually out of California.
Yeah.
You had then Joe Lewis and one other guy. I can't think of his name now, but those major players came through the school. Well, I just got back. I just changed. I have a
St. Louis, that was Fred Wren's territory, right? Did Fred,
yes,
you
sir. I was
Fred
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The story goes to there. So anyway, okay. They come in on a Friday afternoon, and they stick around. All the guys went out late. I popped my classes that night. Well, Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning, I came back, you know, and I had my morning class with my couple of kids. And they all come back in, which is fine. I just kind of kept going. And Jim Thompson, my original instructor, came up. He says, you're done with your students. So I was about 15 minutes. So he goes, all right, finish them up and, you know, come back out. So I did. He goes, okay. All these guys walk through, you know, Al Tracy, Ray Klingenberg, Joe Lewis, Ted Mancuso, all those guys. So right now, Jim goes, it's time to test. I said, test for what? He goes, your black belt. And I'm like, okay. He said, tell me about this. He goes, that's the whole idea, you know. So I sat there and went through about 2.5 hours worth of just every technique, every one thing about Tracy's. They had a whole lot of stuff you had to do for each belt rank. And I had to go through every single one of them, plus all the copies, which is probably about 15 of them. So about 3 hours, almost 4 hours out, I'm in the horse stands. They came back out, and I'm sweating, about to throw up. And Joe comes up to me. He goes, not bad, kid. And from that point, I got nicknamed the kid all the way even through later in life. And he goes,
well, that was your nickname.
That was my nickname. He goes, good going, kid. He says, but we don't have a black belt for you. I'm like, okay. He said, but I do. So he goes out to the car. He comes back in, and I still have that belt sitting on my wall right now. I'm looking at it. He handed me his black belt he wore that for that series of time. He goes, we're not going to sit here and test you for 3.5 hours, Nick. He says, and not give you a black belt. He says, so you know what? I'm going to give you mine. So he gave me his, and I still have that thing. And life went on from that point.
Carl, when you make your will, you need to will that to me. You don't understand that, right? Don't forget that.
Yeah,
okay, brother. That's important.
So
go ahead.
No, that's okay. But going forward in time, you know, later in time,
yeah.
I've met Joe. Joe was always through my life. I later went on from Tracy's because the gym who owned it at that point in time, he was going back to Wisconsin, and I wasn't really much of a business man, so I was still a kid. At this point in time, I was about 18 years old. Fred Wren came along, and Fred basically said, hey, you want to teach for me? I'm like, yeah. So I joined Fred back in those days, went to school in Florida, Missouri.
Stop right there. Stop. I've got to stop you.
Yes.
I got to ask you a question because this is one of the magic
yes.
questions that I didn't ask you on the pre-interview, but I want to hit you in the heart with the right cross you didn't block, and you hadn't been hit probably like that in a long time. What was it like getting in the ring with Fred Whirlwind Wren? I mean, his reputation alone would scare the crap out of people. What was it like working out with him, man?
I had two awesome mentors. I had Lewis, who was the technician in the brain, and a tough fighter, too. I mean, that was awesome. But I went from Joe to work for Fred. And Fred was
– wow.
Fred was a maniac. I mean, Fred was the hard-going – pushing
a maniac. Yeah, like that.
Yeah. It's a maniac, you know. I mean, I have a scar above my left eye right to this day where he popped me first time in the classroom and bare knuckle and hit me with a back fist. And he goes, oh, that's all right. Don't worry about it. Put a Band-Aid on it, you know.
Right.
So I got involved with Fred for years, but Joe was always passing through my life. Joe always came in town. He said, hey, what are you doing, kid? I said, well, I'm teaching. He said, well, come on in. So he came out to school. You know, Fred would go, is Joe there? I'm like, yeah. So, you know, he didn't say nothing about it. He goes, okay, whatever. He was, and so I worked for Fred for probably about 3.5-4 years before I went to, you know, South Carolina. But in that point in time, I had some awesome students throughout that short period of time. Out of that school, I produced probably about two champion black belts at the time, Ernest Hart and Greg Wilkinson. And both of them were 3-time to 4-time world champions out there in California. One was actually Ernest Hart was in the movies and stuff back in the 80s, and we're still friends today. Ernest is still in town. And
I want to ask you a couple questions. That
sure.
My listeners emailed me and wanted me to ask you. First of all, you were personal with Mr. Lewis, and most people know Mr. Lewis as being a traditional master karate instructor who taught incredible seminars, who actually worked out with Bruce Lee, the first 1974 known world heavyweight champion. But they also didn't understand that he was not only smart, but he had a really big heart for people in passing on teaching knowledge. You're one of those proteges. So the question I want to ask you is that, what did you actually personally learn from Joe on a personal basis to help you become a better point fighter in the time that you were rated?
Joe was a very high intellect. He was a thinker. He would get me out there at times. He'd pop by or, you know, and he says, hey, what are you doing lately? I'm like, oh, I'm just working my back fist, which he's on the first thing he showed me, and a sidekick and that kind of stuff. And you know, he would break it down to the most simplest point and make me go do it 100 times or better. He goes, do it again, do it again, do it again. No, do it again. And it's just, he was on task all the time. I mean, when we got done, he goes, take a break. Let's go get some lunch. And the switch went off. He was a very humble, very, I would say, reclusive in a way. You know, he was outgoing, but in his own time, he was pretty much stayed to himself. And it's kind of funny because he had, like, two different personalities. He'd go in the ring, put that belt on, and he was a different persona. He'd get him outside, and he would come to my house later in life and stay with my kids, and he would say, don't tell him that I'm here. It's just, I'm incognito. I just want to get away from things for a while. He says, you know, and he'd come and sit and have ice cream with my kids. We sit there and go swimming. We go fishing. I mean, you can imagine Bill Lewis fishing in the fishing pole, really. you know, most people don't think Joe Lewis is fishing.
I gotta ask you, too, how did it come about him becoming the godfather to your son, which is very, very
special. He became close to my family. My middle son, at the time my wife was pregnant, he came to, at the time, at this point in time, I'm in South Carolina. We were at my school in South Carolina, over in a little town called South Congaree. And my wife was pregnant at the time, and there's a picture of him and my wife at the time and one of my students, and Joe's in the middle, and my wife's like 8 months pregnant. He's rubbing her belly and got a big old smile on his face, and he goes, wow. You know, he goes, I want to see this one. He comes out, that's a pretty big boy going to come out of that one. So it went on. My son got was born, and months later he came back through town, had him at mother's school in Boozer Shopping Center up in Columbia. He goes, where's the baby? I'm like, he's right over there. And he goes, he says, you need to be a godfather. Be a godfather. And I said, good. You going to sign up for it? He goes, yep, I'm doing that. I need to have somebody I can call one of my grandkids.
that is so cool.
And we all looked at him, and Barbara would go, my wife would go at the time. She goes, are you serious? He goes, yeah. He goes, no, I don't have no kids at this point in time.
Did your son realize who Mr. Lewis was? I mean,
no, not at the time. He was still a baby and infant and a little, you know, swing.
Oh, I know,
you know
that.
But later,
you know now.
Well, yeah, later in time, yes, he learned who he was, and he thought it was kind of cool. And he used to Citadel grad from Columbia, South Carolina, and he'd get down there and talk to all his buddies. Hey, my dad knows Joe Lewis. He's my godfather.
Now,
kind of thing.
I want to talk about also. You know, you not only was a competitor, but you were one of the alumni of all of us, the school owner. Now, you had a couple of schools in South Carolina, which is part of my alumni, and a big shout-out to Mike Genova and Bruce Bucci and Mr. Sam Chapman and all those great guys. But
great
me,
people.
And Michael Goldman, Hot Dog. But tell me about those days in South Carolina. And why did you pick Costa
cool.
Mountain?
I mean, when Joe first came in town in the school and music shopping center, I went to Mike and those guys and Keith and Bruce and all those guys. Said, hey, Joe's coming to town. You know, you want to come on down to school? And he's going to charge us a couple of bucks, but no big deal. And so we did. There's pictures of us all in the classroom or in the dojo for almost a full day. And it was pretty amazing because I was just new in town, and that's a good way for me to kind of break the ice. And I'm a new kid from, you know.
How old were you back then in South Carolina when you had the schools?
South Carolina, I was probably about 22, 23 years old.
Okay, I'm going to do something to you that's going to make you think a little bit, Carl. And I promise that next time when we see each other or we have lunch, you'll laugh. Okay, I'm going to shoot some names at you. And if you remember them, you're going to be a real, real old hoot. You ready? Albert Church,
yep.
Ridgely Abel.
Yep.
Okay.
Ridgely Abel's a good friend.
Ronnie Barcoot.
Ronnie know him well.
Oh, man. Dave Adams,
yeah. The thing is, I got to know.
Really?
What is it?
Wow, cool, man.
Rick and Randy Smith, the guys from North Carolina, you know.
James Vernon.
Yep.
Remember James Vernon? Vic Coffin?
Yep, I do.
You don't remember Vic Coffin?
Yes, I do.
Really? Really? Daryl
Lassner.
Bill McDonald, Charlie June. I know you don't
Bill McDonald. Bill McDonald and I became really close friends. I used to go to school up in North Carolina back in the day when I was younger, and we would fight up there with Jerry Pennington in the school up there. You know, Jerry Pennington was, you know, I have a lot of respect for Jerry. Jerry,
Jerry Pennington.
He's an awesome man. He really is. Him and Joe were really tight people, you know, and you mentioned Roger Green was the same way. Him and Roger were pretty tight.
Yeah.
And Joe and Roger.
I'm going to say this to my listeners. Carl, you're one of those gentlemen, great karate guys that was rated in the Karate Illustrated days, but you were around greatness from the time you started to the time you retired. And that's something that's really cool about you. And you know, we're going to talk about later in the show about the Legends Name Game. We're going to talk about some people that we both know. But those schools that you had in South Carolina and you were competing, those were the Karate Illustrated days, correct, when you were rated back then?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that like back then to know that you were actually in a magazine and you were rated? Did you thrill that, or did you care about that?
It was, you know, it's something that Joe, you know, pushed me because, you know, like Roger Green and so much. Roger was like a carbon copy of Joe Louis, you know, and I was
right.
The other smaller copy of Joe Louis because Roger was close to him, really tight. You know, Jerry Pennington had his own
Roger
style.
Green?
Stuff.
Carl,
Roger,
were you close to Roger?
Back in the day, yes. I used to go out to school in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay, well, I'm
going to
say something. Carl, let me share this with you. Just a week ago, Carl and Roger was put into the hospital, and he's still in the hospital. So if you keep him in your prayers and your thoughts, and, you know, Karen, I talked to Karen just yesterday, and he's still in the hospital. So, but Roger Green, God bless him, man. He was an animal. Now, you got to work with Roger, too?
Yeah, Roger was, like I said, you could put Joe Louis and Roger Green side by side and you'd swear they're both the same people. They had the same. Now, my movements were a little bit different because I was a little more flashier, I guess, or whatever. And I was, but those two were almost, I mean, he was a carbon copy of Joe Louis. I mean, he really was, you know, and I loved Roger back in the day. He had one of the students, I can't remember the kid's name, we used to work out a lot when I was so I took over a school in Tulsa for a while for Fred Wren. Later in time, and got to know those guys more often. I mean, Jim Buten used to work for Fred. You know, I knew all those guys. You know,
Jim Buten is one of my best friends. He's not only a fishing
Jim
buddy.
Roy Kirby, Jim Buten,
this weekend,
all those guys.
And Carl, this weekend he's hanging out with me at my booth all weekend, and then 2 weeks later he hangs out with me for 4 days at the Super Show at Las Vegas. Jim Buten and I are boozing buddies.
Jim's a good guy. We go back in the 70s and stuff. And you know.
Well, I want to ask you, Carl, what was your favorite technique to hit people with? What did you like to hit people with back then? What was your favorite kissing or punching technique? You.
My favorite technique was obviously two things. You know, the back fist. If I didn't do it right, I get hit. Or a side kick. But you know, I kind of developed a spinning hook kick was my biggest thing back in the day. I mean, I'd knock more people on their butts with a spinning hook kick. And I got out of I copied. Well, I didn't copy. I studied a lot of guys. The one thing that Joe instilled in me, he says, if you want to beat somebody, you want to be great, watch everybody. Watch your competition, and I'd sit there, and I would sit there and study people just like he did. So I got to know, and I got to train you guys, with Howard Jackson out there, he was a great giant guy in California when I was a Navy SEAL. I'd go out and practice, him, and
Stop. You were a Navy SEAL?
Well, back in the 80s, I was going through, had my schools, and in about 1982, last school in Dillon, South Carolina, Joe and I've been talking to Joe about some things over the years. He's going into North Carolina to coming through, and he stopped at my school there in Dillon, South Carolina. And I said, I got a question for you. He goes, what's that? I said, I need something different. He goes, what do you need something different? He goes, love what you're doing. Like, I do, but I need something more challenging. And I had a student friend of mine that I've taught in St. Louis that became a Navy SEAL commander years later. And when I caught up with him years ago, he found me on Facebook. He goes, we talked. He goes, man, you got to try this. It's fun. You want some challenges. So in 1983, 84, I dropped everything, closed the schools. I went to San Diego, walked in, says, sign me up. And that's what I did for 6 years.
Well, Carl, I thank you. First of all, thank you for your service. But you know what? I love surprises. In our pre-interview, you're so humble and so sweet. You didn't even mention that. And listen to me. That's exactly what I admire about the Navy SEALs, the real Navy SEALs and the people that served our country on that particular order, because I've become friends with quite a few of them. And God bless you. God bless you, Carl, for your service. Here's something else I want to share with my listeners. A lot of the martial artists that we've interviewed here on the show were also people involved with the service and armed forces. And, every year we honor those. And so I've got to add another Armed Forces Award to the award that you're getting this year for Legends, because you just surprised me. God bless you, sir. God bless you.
It's something I could have been. I was good. I really was. I thought it was good. I mean, I won probably close to 200 trophies. I was a good top man because I trained with Master Jose.
You were rated back then. If you were rated in front of the other studies, you were the who. Okay,
you were rated by
the promoters. Yeah.
Yeah, I just. Mike Anderson, all those guys. I mean, I got to the point where I just wanted to do something different. What startled it all was basically a parent came up to me one day and says, Carl, I know you love what you're doing. I can see it. You're just very passionate about what you do. He goes, so what are you really going to do? I'm like, I'm going to do this. He goes, seriously. He goes, when you get 60 years old or 70 years old or 50 years old, are you going to still want to do karate? I'm like, well, yeah. He goes, you didn't really think about that, I'm like, oh, okay. So it didn't hit me until a year or two later. I'm there in South Carolina, and with Johnny Davis, a little kid at the time, 11 years old, and Johnny now is a, big-time guy. And
Johnny Davis. Hello, Johnny Davis, one of my history generals who was one of your students.
Let me tell you something about Johnny real quick. First time I saw him at 11 years old, he's in front of we had an old Goodyear building we turned into a karate school, okay? He would walk up and down the sidewalk in front of the glass looking at me. And so he came in one day, he had a pair of chucks. He goes, sir. I said, yes. He goes, can I come in? I said, yeah, come on in. He comes on in, and I said, you know how to do that? He goes, yeah, I'm pretty good at it, which he was. He was good. He was a big Bruce Lee fan. And he goes,
right,
can I take lessons? I said, well, sure. He goes, but I ain't got no money. My mom don't have no money. I said, well, that's okay. Come on in. So he come in, and so the next day he came back, he had a plate full of chocolate chip cookies. His mom made me a chocolate chip cookie plate. that was her payment because she couldn't pay me anything. I said, I don't want your money. Come on in. But Johnny, from that point forward, basically was there. He would clean my windows. He would do anything he wanted me to do, but he wanted to learn karate. And he was his first tournament is an orange belt. He took him to Columbia, South Carolina at the time. We had a tournament there, Dewey's tournament. He goes in and wins his first trophy. You know, and from that point on, he just did this, that, and the other. And as I left, he continued on.
Well, you know, I can't wait to see him this weekend at the battle and to talk to him and tell him what you did to share with me. Ask him about the cookies?
Ask him about the cookies. Yeah, he brought me into his
mind. I will. You know, the history that you have just in South Carolina and working and teaching and getting involved, and then you share with me that you're a SEAL. I'm going to ask you, going back to Joe Lewis again, Mr. Lewis, you know, the question I've asked quite a few people who've been close to him, who I've interviewed, like Mr. Jeff Smith and other people, I've asked him the same question. I'm going to ask you, how good was Mr. Lewis?
How good? To me, from my perspective, from the
in your
time
perspective,
I met him,
how good as a fighter was
there's
Joe
a lot,
Lewis?
There's a lot of great fighters. I met all the old guys. I grew up in that era. I was a kid, but I knew all of them. Chuck Norris, all those guys. You know, when I was there in Dallas, I ran into Chuck several times, and it's Bill Wallace, great guys. I mean, there's excellent people all through the continent. But to me, and I traveled quite a bit, even though I was in the service and did some stuff. But the bottom line is, Joe was a unique person. I kind of look at Joe as, you know, I kind of wrote some things down. He was a pioneer to me. He was a pioneer in the sport. You know, he had a vision.
All of it.
A vision.
All of it.
There was a vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a vision to be, you know, do something different and make a difference. You know, disrupt the norm, which became full contact karate. You know. And the leader ability in him, you know, he would take things, get an idea, produce it, and get the results. Well, his results was he wasn't just going to pass on to somebody else. He got in the ring and says, I'm going to do it first and show everybody I can get it done. Then I'll come teach you how to do it. You know, and
I'll tell you what, Carl, I'm going to put you on the spot. You got 3 minutes to tell me your best Joe Lewis story. Right there, boom, on the spot.
My best Joe Lewis story?
Carl.
Oh, okay, I'll tell you one. St. Louis, when I had my black belt test, okay, when I was a kid, we went to the International House of Pancakes, okay? Here we're sitting with all these guys, all these dignitaries, right? He gets a big, large salad. So we're all sitting there talking. I had my pancakes, and all the guys are talking, and it's, I swear to God, all of a sudden, out comes the bowl with a big cockroach. You know? He looks at me and goes, what the hell is this? So the lady came down, she goes, he's got this cockroach in his hand. I mean, this thing was like a good inch and a half long. He goes, is this protein? Do I need to eat this?
That's
I
great.
Swear to you, everybody in, I mean, Al Tracy, Ray Klingenberg, Jim Thompson, all of us, we were laughing. I mean, we disrupted the whole place because we were laughing so damn hard. And he wasn't mad. He just said, well, should I eat this thing? Is this good protein, guys? You think I should eat this? I'm like, I don't think so, sir. He goes, well, no, I guess not. Here, and what he does, he puts it in a glass, a water glass, and hands it off to the waitress. That's the best thing with him. I mean, he was so cool and so just debonair. He sat there and says, should I eat this?
Absolutely.
Like, no.
You know, I've got a couple of stories, but I'm going to tell one right now. I got two my favorite all-time Joe Lewis favorite stories that affected me. I went to a seminar with his, and there was like 30 guys that tested, and there's probably about six or seven that made first degree black belt. The following day, he was at an event, and he was doing and talking about his sidekick and how powerful it was and how quick it was, and he couldn't see it, and you know, he's just really, you know, how much he was proud of his sidekick.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, he put his hand up, he says, I need a volunteer. Well, the first thing you do, you never volunteer to be at a Joe Lewis seminar, especially if he asks you to do it. And all these first-degree black belt guys raised their hand up, all six of them. And he picked out the biggest one. And the guy walked over, no equipment on and stuff. And he says, are you ready? And the guy just nodded his head. As soon as he nodded his head, Joe just faked the sidekick and then backhanded him across the face. Really, really super hard, right? And he just looked at him, and he didn't apologize or anything. So he asked for another volunteer. And, of course, the other five guys, they raised their hand up, and they were making fun of the other guy who got faked out. So the other guy came walking up, and Joe says, okay, are you ready? And he says, yeah, I'm ready. And he said, yeah, I picked up on that. He didn't say, yes, sir. He goes, yeah, I'm ready, just like that. And so Joe faked the backhand strike. Faked the backhand strike, which everyone thought he was going to throw. That guy rose both hands up, left his body up, and Joe stepped across that sidekick, knocked him 10 feet across the wall, hit the wall, just went wham. Walked over there and just looked at him and said, he says, you know, you got to think yin and yang when you think about karate, bro. You know, it's the only thing that Chinese influences with us. And you just turned around and walked away. I never forgot it.
It was cool.
Give me another one.
Well, here's the biggest thing. It means a lot to me, and not a lot to me. I'm still living. When I decided to do what I did as far as the because, you know, he was a Marine, and, you know, I'm just going to be a Navy guy. We're all brothers. We're all the same. We're all Navy. When I enlisted and went in, and I graduated, he was there. He showed up. You know, I didn't know. I mean, he says, when's your graduation? I said, it's, you know, X, this, that. And then he goes, all right. And that's all he said about it later in time. And my graduation, my mom came up. My dad had passed away early in life. And I looked up. Here he's standing there, big old smile on his face. Kid, damn it, you did it. I'm like, yes, sir, I did.
Wow,
he
cool.
Said, no. You think you can kick my ass? I'm like, no.
That's really cool.
You're bad now. I'm like, no, I'm not bad. I've just been trained well. I can swim better. That's all I can do right now.
Well, I can tell you that it was very much a part of your life. And I got to ask you this question this weekend at the Battle of Atlanta, Mr. Joe Corley. And Jeff Smith and Bill Wallace, who were very close to Mr. Lewis, honoring a few guys, a handful of guys, with the Joe Lewis Eternal Award. And I'd like to know how you feel about that, to be able to carry on his wisdom and his legacy.
Anybody who receives that thing should be honored, way beyond one of any trophy, any awards, or how many awards you ever got. Because to me, he changed the arts. He changed from the old traditional stuff back in the 70s or 60s. And, you know, there were some great people back then. But he just turned it around to, I mean, MMA today is because of Joe Lewis, I believe, personally. You know, and anybody who takes that award and puts it in their house, in their office, or school, wherever it may be, should look at that thing every day and say, you know, that's the man who put me where I am today, doing what I want to do and loving what I'm doing, because I think he forged there's a lot of great people out there, but he was, to me, he was special. He had something. He was good looking. He was debonair. He was cocky. He was arrogant. Anything you want to tell him. But the bottom line, he got him away from all that stuff. And he was sitting in my house on my couch, eating spaghetti or an ice cream. He was the most humble, loving, kind. Now, he wasn't outside of that, but to see the real side of him when he was relaxed and away from all the karate people, and he would say, don't tell anybody I'm here. I'm like, that's not my business. I can tell anybody anything. I'm glad to see you here. So I just think anybody who takes that and receives that, that they should understand that he's the Muhammad Ali of boxing, you know, or the Michael Jordan of basketball. And it's an honor to be able to receive that and treasure it. Because he will go down in
the
history books.
Let me ask you about Mr. Lewis, one more thing about him. When was the last time you got to talk to him?
When I moved to Philadelphia, he moved up with Dennis Macker back in the late mid-90s or so, you know, and we ate Philly cheesesteaks. And, I mean, but the last time I saw him was probably
about... Was you with him in 74 when he fought on ABC? Or was you with him after that?
No, I was since 19. I saw him. He was in 1972. We met in 1968.
So when he was on ABC Wide World of Sports, and he won the world title with Jeff Smith and
Mr. Wallace. Yeah, and the Canadian guy. I can't think of his name. You heard the guy?
That changed the world.
Mike Anderson was the one who put PKA together. I mean, I worked for Mike Anderson with Fred Wren. I knew Mike well. Yeah, I mean, he put us on the map. He really did.
I could do a whole story on the PKA. I know I could.
I stayed with Oklahoma City with Mike Anderson for almost 6 months when I was younger. Learning the ropes because I took over Fred's school. I mean, so him and Fred were partners at that time. You know,
I've got Bone, all those guys. Carl, I got to share with you one more story about Joe Louis that for my listeners, because everyone again are listening, they probably saw one side of Mr. Louis. And that was the side that we all admired and stuff. But there was a deep side of him, like he shared with me, and what he did with me personally, and it affected me too. You mentioned Mike Anderson. He just invented the top 10 equipment that was made out of leather, the top leather.
Correct.
And I was introducing it in Texas, and he was in Savannah, Georgia at the Super Grand, and Mr. Right. Lewis had a booth and everything there. And it was a time when I was introducing Black Belt TV. Garrett was with me, my little seven-year-old son. Now, Mr. Anderson was talking about how different these equipment was going to change and revolutionize sport karate, and the only difference was it was leather, so it was controversial.
Right.
And Glenn Kinney was there, and Mr. Wallace was there, and Mr. Louis was there. And you know Mr. Wallace, how he is. He was just really egging this on, and when they were talking about Jeff Spin back kick and which one had the best one, and Bill was going, well, you know, Glenn Keeney had a good one, but Mr. Lewis had probably the best one. And they were just agging, and they got into like an argument type thing and fun. And then finally, Mike Anderson, who you know was very smart, he says, well, listen, won't too many of you guys show it and use my foot as an example? So they said, so Bill agging on a little bit more, Glenn Keeney took off his right foot. And they asked for a volunteer, and I volunteered, which is really kind of dumb, but I did. And I got in a fighting stance about 2 feet against the wall, thinking that he'd kick me, but, you know, I could take it. And Mr. Keeney did a jump spin back kick with the top 10 equipment on, brand new, and it was perfect. Just barely touched my nose, Carl. I mean, just barely touched my nose, and it was beautiful. So then Mr. Lewis took off his left foot, left his other shoe on, but just took off his left foot, put the left foot of the top 10 shoe on, and didn't tell me get ready or anything. Just if
he
I
did.
Had the key eyed, he just then back kicked me in the chest hard enough to knock me against the wall that if I didn't brace myself in key eye, he would have knocked the wind out of me. And I took it. Everyone kind of freaked out. Bill was laughing because he instigated the whole thing. And then what was really the best story out of the story was Black Belt TV had me do these commercials, and I had no place to put my son. He was 7 years old. And Mr. Lewis says, I can take care of him. And this blew me away. So I left Garrett with Mr. Lewis for almost 2 hours in Savannah, Georgia at Super Grand. When I came back, I was going through the crowd. Yeah, when I went through the crowd, I see him in the distance. Garrett, 7 years old, was sitting on Mr. Lewis's knee, and Mr. Lewis was playing with him. And the next day, he bought us breakfast and gave me a bunch of stuff for the museum. And, you know, God bless him. I really admire talking about him.
He was great, my kid. So the big thing about kicking, that's one thing most people won't mention. He was a very good kicker. I mean, he didn't show it, but when he could throw a side kick, he could throw a spinning hook kick, he could kick. I mean, everybody, he just never used them. He was every now and then you'd see him throw one, but, you know, he was a very, very flexible but muscular. I mean, he had some power. He kicked a bag at my school, and they took him off the hook one day. And I'm like, golly. You know, thanks, sir. You know, you got a hole in the wall now. But, yeah, he
did you get to see him fight tournaments at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I used to, yeah.
Okay, what was his best
around.
Fight you saw him fight? What was his best fight you saw him fight? That you
best
remember.
Fight? Oh, wow.
Yeah, one of the best fights you remember. You remember.
Probably with John Civitan.
John. You know what?
John
Civitan. You ready for this karma, bro? John just called me less than an hour ago, bro.
Yep. John Civitan. Him and
yeah,
John
Civitan.
Yeah,
he called me less than an hour ago. Yeah, he's going to be sitting at my booth in Atlanta. He just called me an hour ago. Isn't that great? So tell me about that fight. Tell me about that fight you saw.
That fight was just, it was, Joe was arrogant in a lot of ways. Thought he, you know, but there's guys out there, you know, point fighting. That's why he got out of point fighting, because he wanted to be out there and really hit them up, you know. And point fighting him was, he says, was, it's just wasn't what karate's all about, kind of thing.
But, right.
I mean, I was at that tournament, and, you know, that was a good fight. Those guys, they were going at it. But, you know, the last punch, you know, John came in, grabbed his knee, and nailed him right square in the chest. And I'm like, whoa. And he was like, Joe, like, looking at him like, how the hell did you just do that one? You know, and it was a picture. I've seen a picture of it, too, also, in back in the day. That was taken, one of the magazines took a picture of it. But
Wow.
I think that was one of the best fights when John and Tibnet tagged him. And Joe was just kind of like, whoa.
You got great pictures of you and Joe together. A rare moment.
I got a suitcase of pictures of Joe and I and my family. And it's just,
okay.
You
pick them out. I want some special ones picked out for me, okay? I really do. Now, I'm going to take a short break, Carl, and I'm going to come back.
Right.
We're going to play the Legends name game, and I'm going to shoot some names at you. And, you know, I appreciate you giving time with me. Just stay tuned. I'll be back in just a few minutes, okay?
Good.
Super. You know, guys, thank you for listening tonight. I'm with Carl Napovich, one of the great proteges of Joe Lewis. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's show as much as I have, just talking about Mr. Lewis and just his heyday. Speaking of heyday, coming up this weekend is the one and only Battle of Atlanta, June the 15th. Now, particularly, I'm excited about Friday night. Friday night, we'll be honoring Mr. Joe Lewis, and with the Eternal Warrior Award put on by Mr. Jeff Smith, Mr. Bill Wallace, and Mr. Joe Corley. Mr. Joe Corley's gone through quite extensive things to make this happen for all of us, bringing together 40 years of the PKA and 50 years of the Battle of Atlanta. I understand that George Chung will be there doing a documentary-type television-type series for interviews with all these great people that will be there also. And this will be from Friday, June 15th, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. And this is going to be really interesting. There will be a gathering of world changers, and that's what Mr. Cordy is calling it. And this will be in Atlanta, Georgia, this weekend. Also coming up August 3rd, I mentioned earlier, the Legends Banquet will be happening in Washington, D.C., and in Dallas, in Washington, D.C., that will be the, the NASCAR tournament, which is Dennis Brown's U.S. Capitol Classics. Also, August 15th, 16th, and 17th, the Universal Hall of Fame will be in Houston, Texas, at the Marriott, and this will be put on Mr. Severo Guerrero and Mr. Daryl Stewart. For more information, please contact Mr. Severo Guerrero on Facebook or Mr. Daryl Stewart on Facebook and find out about the Universal Hall of Fame, one of the oldest Hall of Fames in existence in America. They'll be coming into Houston again September the 28th and 29th with a great weekend of martial arts extravaganza. It's the Living Legends 26, and we'll be honoring the women this year, the power of women, honoring women of martial arts with a women's symposium on Friday, a fighters reunion on Friday evening, a black belt test for women Friday afternoon, all kinds of free seminars for you on Friday. Kata Wars will be Saturday, an open tournament for the country to compete in with the pro division of Kata Wars. And always, you have to have 100 first places just to be invited to the pro division. The open tournament is open to anybody, white belt through black belt. The women's symposium will be featuring such speakers as Phil Torres, Colonel Phil Torres, retired, talking about gun control and gun safety. Dean Piles from Elite Combat and Alex Piles, world champion. We also have a couple engineers from NASA and, of course, the curator and runner, the moderator of the Women's Symposium, Sheehan Darlene McPherson, will be there. She was also an engineer. So the power of women, September the 28th. Now, Saturday, right next door, the following day, is going to be the Mikey Roe Moore Celebrity Roast. Now, Mikey Roe Moore is an icon of sport karate, but this year we're introducing fighting. That's right, the Jim Harrison's America's Challenge Kumite Black Belt Challenge, and this will be eight fighters chosen from the Sport Karate Museum with 100 first places under their wins, the judges judging with 100 first place under their wins. So very unique fighting show that night, the dinner and roast. More information, contact the Sport Crider Museum at 713-483-0476. And I'd like to also mention, remember that we have a fundraiser going on right now on Facebook. Check it out. It's under the Sport Crider Museum. All the cool pictures. Our goal is to do 500 pictures a month in the archives so you can see some of the incredible things that we've collected through the years. And I've thrown in videos also, so that's the fundraiser on Facebook under Sport Karate Museum. Now, I'd like to come back and bring back my special guest tonight. Carl, are you there?
Still here. I'm here.
Okay, little brother. The Legends Name Game is something that I created at the first set of the interviews 2 years ago. And I was interviewing Monster Man Everett Eddy. And we started talking about some really cool people. And Monster Man said, well, you know, it'd be cool if I could talk about everybody individually. So I created the Legends Name Game from Monster Man's vision. So I'm going to ask you about a name. And you got 3 minutes to tell me about how that person influenced you, what he did for you, or how you thought he might have changed sport karate. Okay, you ready for the first one?
Yep.
Howard Jackson.
Howard Jackson, great guy. His game was, he was a charger. He was quick on his feet. He was quick to the point. What I learned from him was speed and accuracy. And he was always moving. He's like a jumping bean. He was always in the ring. And like I said, when I was in the Navy, I had times the weekends I'd go see him and work out him and his at Chuck Noah's school in Northern California that way. And Howard's an awesome guy. I miss him to death. He was awesome. He taught me a lot as far as just being small as a lightweight at the time and how to get in and get out. So, awesome guy.
My best story with Howard is I was roasting Eric Lee in Hollywood, California, and I had everybody there, Carl. I mean, it was just a who's who group of people there in that mall. That
Eric
night.
Lee, wow.
And Don Wilson asked Gary if I use the microphone. I said, of course. And Don Wilson, you know, great fighter, great movie star. He goes, I'd like to say something right here tonight. The greatest striker that ever lived is in the room tonight, and his name is Howard Jackson. Everybody gave him a standing ovation. And that night, we was introduced that he had leukemia. And, you know, It hurt me so much when we lost him. And this year at the Jim Harrison American Challenge that you'll be at, I'm introducing the Howard Jackson rule, and that is a blitz rule, which you just mentioned he was known for. And that is if a fighter hits another fighter 3 to 4 to 5 times before the center referee can pull you apart, the judges, 3 out of 4 judges, will give that fighter 3 points. And I did that under Howard Jackson. And rest in peace, Howard. I love you, and Carl loves you, and we love talking about you. I got another one for you. You got to work out with the queen of movies, Cynthia Rothrock, China O'Brien. Tell me about her.
She was amazing. She was the kata lady. She was my student, my female students. I had a bunch of them back in the day, and they always just wanted to emulate her and just, you know, mean. So we met at a tournament up north in New York one time in a tournament. I took my girls up there. I had 5 or 6 of them. They're all, you know, champions in their own right, and kata and kumite. And they just, she was so gracious, and she would just take the time and pull them aside and work with them. She lived right not too far from me. I lived in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, up towards the mountains. Her parents live about 30 miles away from me. She'd come in town, and, you know, she's just, I followed her, not to stalk her, but she was just a gracious lady, and very, and she's a good looking woman too. But she had such
beautiful.
A style.
Beautiful.
She had such a style, and she was just so graceful. My female.
You don't realize she was Tang Sido, and then she did Kung Fu, but she was Tang Sido first, right?
Yes, she was.
In Pennsylvania.
Yes, she was. I mean,
I'll tell you my favorite story about Cindy
awesome
is 1982, Leo Fong and Ron Marchini's tournament, top 10. And it was her first tournament that she won a grand championship. And I won first place in my division. John Frenade, the first tournament that he won, from Canada in America, he won, and we went for grand. And she comes out with her hook swords, or did these dynamic hook swords. And she won her first grand championship in 1982 in the Leo Fong's tournament. And I became friends with her after that. She was really, really good.
I hated the fact that women
would beat us in kata. God bless her. She was so good. It was so good.
But
to
yeah,
watch
I would
before.
Put me
yeah.
between her and the Leia the Costas back in the day was
yeah.
were really two women that I really saw as far as kata was just superb. I mean, those ladies are just
amazing.
Graceful as hell, you know.
And we get to honor him this year. We get to honor him this year. How cool is that? Now,
that's cool.
You mentioned someone that you asked me to mention, and before you talk about your story, I've got to share a story with you. And we're talking about
okay.
Hadi Ochai. At
oh,
one time
gosh, yeah.
at a tournament, he asked me if I'd be his uki to lay down, and he cut a rice grain. I'm not making this up. A rice grain on the for my forehead with his katana. And I did not hesitate. And I did, yes, sir. And he cut a rice grain on my forehead with his katana. Now, years later, we're getting inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame in California. And he shows up with his entourage. And he looks at me, and he never could say Gary. He'd always say Gowie. And he said, Gowie, Gowie, Gowie. He said it three times. Gowie, Gowie, Gowie. He came running over, and he gave me one of his coins. One of his Hadi Ochai coins, and he gave that to me, and he got inducted that night. And I didn't go to the ceremony. I was in back, and he literally got off the podium, Carl, and he was looking around the room, and he goes, well, golly, and someone pointed me in the very back. I was in the very back, you know, and he looked at me, and he got in a rip position. God bless him. He got in a rip position,
yeah.
and he bowed. And he said, pointed right at me, way in the back of the room. He says, Gawi, Gawi Lee, Samurai. And I never forget that. And just, I love him so much. So tell me your story about Hadi Ochai.
My story with him is, I met him in Saints when I was still in Syracuse. I mean, he was in Vestal, New York, which is probably about 45 minutes where I used to live as a kid. And I met one of the students at the New York State Karate Championships when I won as a green belt and a brown belt, and he was always in the tournaments, and he had his own tournaments there in New York. And so I became friends with one of his students, and he would travel to Tracy's, and I'd go back and travel with him back to Vestal, you know, New York, and to Mr. Ojai's school. And he'd start talking, you know, what do you want to do? So, you know, he'd teach me, I did the samurai, I did everything I could, you know, possibly do, but I was doing some other stuff, so I didn't have time to really practice it. But I just followed him over the years. I was in the USK Nationals back in the 80, 81, 82. He was inside of my ring. He goes, you fight. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to fight. He goes, go get him. So he was undecidedly just, you know, do this. I'm like, okay.
He was a dog called Washin Ru Kadate. Yes, and
so,
he was known for wearing salt and pepper. He'd wear black pants and a white top. And, he not only went in kata, but he did these spectacular halftime demonstrations of blindfolding and cutting katanas, you know, with, you know, watermelons, all kinds of good stuff. But, you know, I was crazy back then. I can't believe he did that to me. And,
he was,
I love talking
about
him.
He's a tough old dude.
Oh yeah, I know. It's really cool.
I went through town Mother's Day of last year to see my mom in Syracuse, and I stopped by the school and walked in. He looks at me and he goes, "Salo." I'm like, "Yes, sir." I bow and he goes, "You kids, white hell." Like, well, that's how much I said, "And you sir are white hair too." He goes, "Yes, I'm very old." I said, "Well, I'm right behind you. I'm old, but not very old." Awesome.
That's
man.
Funny.
Now, in
Philadelphia, who influenced you up in the Philadelphia area?
Philadelphia, Mike Pasquale, worked out with his dad a couple times, and him and Mike, and Dennis Nackard was getting an old Tracy people. I was just working out some of those guys at times when I had an opportunity.
Did you know Nick Sirio and Anthony Sirio and Mike Burton and Christina Van Rodriguez and Don Rodriguez and those guys?
Yeah, those are guys from they were from North Jersey, I think, weren't they? Or New York, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, no, they're Jersey. They're Philadelphia.
Jersey, okay.
Jersey. Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
I get confused up there in that area, man. It's crazy.
Good fighters up there. I mean, I remember Peter Urban, those guys back in, and all those guys back in those days.
Absolutely.
George Dillman, Dillman and Alexander was the same thing. I just, you know, great people. I mean, even New York State, we had some great people in New York, you know. I got a chance to travel a lot as a kid and in life, and so it's just kind of, I got to know a lot of people. And everywhere I went, I picked out a school, and I go introduce myself and go walk in, you know, that's where I work out. And even to this day, I mean, I'm here in Orlando now, and I'm getting ready to fight in the U.S. championship coming up in July. And I'm 62 years old, and the guy goes, what are you going to do it for us? Because I can. You know, I just want to do it again.
Wow.
You know,
Well,
just
let me ask you a question. How important do you think the Sport Karate Museum and keeping the history alive in front of the new generation today through the social media, how important is the work you think that we do as being a history general? And by the way, congratulations for two things tonight. One, you are nominated to be in the new book that Master Bowen has put together. Congratulations on that. But also, officially, as of now, you are a history general from the Sport Karate Museum. How do you feel about that, being part of that history and keeping that image alive?
I grew up through that. So to me, to let that go would be a tragedy, because today these young guys and people I see here in town and talk to and martial arts, because I always stop by schools and I talk and stuff and say hi or whatever. But, you know, they don't know. You know, they say, Hadiocha, you say Joe Lewis, and, oh, yeah, that old guy. I'm like, no, well, he's no longer with us, but he's an older man. Well, he's here. He was the legends. These are the guys, the founders of this world, you know, the martial arts. But they just,
well, you know,
MMA
what?
Is kind of.
We got some exciting things happening with the Sport Karate Museum, and particularly, I'm going to introduce my new segment to what we've done tonight, and it's going to be the introduction talking about sport karate in America. Now, you said, well, how would this have to do with that? Well, it has to start somewhere, and I'm going to share with you, Carl, something just in a few minutes, right now, and then I'm going to bring you back on. So just listen to this for a moment. The movie Memoirs of an American Samurai, you know, the story of 60 years of sport karate in America, people like we talked about, not Mr. Joe Lewis, you know, this is going to be seen through the eyes of an American samurai, descendant of samurai heritage, attitude, and DNA. You know, we've been friends for many years. When I asked Dana Abbott to write a fictional character for the Memoirs of an American Samurai book, you know, I was approached a year ago to do this movie, and he actually started working on this a year ago. And this is his vision for a character that would really be a samurai descendant, pure, and also be Americanized to explain the craziness of the journey of sport karate in America for 60 years. You know, Dana is, he's my brother, and he understands it's not the rumors of the journey. It's the understanding how it all began to go from a young boy in Hawaii, descended from samurai, and come to the mainland to pursue the journey of a Ronin samurai. You know, sports karate was the vehicle to lay the groundwork for the Sport Karate Museum, you know, archives. I want you to enjoy this part one, and we'll finish part two on our next segment, next radio show, next Tuesday night. We enjoy this part one of the Memoirs of American Samurai in the beginnings of the journey of sport karate in America. It was a clear, crisp morning at the docks in the bustling port city known as Chibashi as the boats and sailing ships began to depart, Edo Bay winding their way up and down the coast of Japan. One medium-sized sailing ship known as the Maru Mari was also traveling the same route. There was nothing special about this vessel. You know, it consisted of a 12-man crew plus 29 passengers, very special passengers. Little did they know what was in store for them or what was the last time they would ever see the shores of Edo again. Japan is known for its many island chains. Their destination was to be one of those islands. Hajidama was also about 800 nautical miles from the coast of Japan. The 29 passengers, samurai, had been sent by a direct edict of the emperor to colonize Japan's outer frontier. Selected samurai families from the various clans were occasionally sent to the outer frontiers to establish new colonies and posts. The samurai clan on the particular ship was traveling east towards the rising sun. The emperor's aim was to colonize a small outpost on an island named Hajidama. That takes about 10 days sailing by light sailing craft. Unfortunately, as they were getting closer to their destination, an ominous storm warning appeared on the horizon. When it hit, it took them off their designated course for 6 days. When the hurricane winds had exhausted, it strengthened visibility, returned there, spotted but what they believed to be Nehadema, upon debarking the vessel. And waiting through the last few feet of water, they heard not a sound or any activity. For weeks, they toured, examined, and searched each and every side for sustainability. They finally realized they had landed on the wrong island, but began to colonize and prepare it for more samurai to come in the next 2 years. Part two will be the next radio show. Thank you for listening. Hey, Carl, what do you think? We're going to be introducing something really cool here in the next few weeks. And this will be the story they'll introduce that we're going to do in sport karate. Well, you know, I want to thank you tonight for sharing with me the story about Mr. Lewis. And this weekend's very special to honor him through the Battle of Atlanta. And now, you do something very special now as far as your real job, and you do cybersecurity. Tell me a little bit about that a little bit.
Well, the cybersecurity, as we all know, we hear it on the radio, we hear it in the newspaper, we see it where we go. I mean, it's just we're being inundated with just all different countries in the world just peeking through our back door. And we got to be able to protect ourselves because, you know, I was a victim in 2007 and from a theft of a wallet. And it took put me into a lot of bad situations financially and bad checks and driver's license change and the whole nine yards. And I still deal with stuff from theft because there's still somebody here in the state of Florida that still has a driver's license in my name that I still been fighting with the state to change the number, and they won't do it. And it's just, you know, I've had people write bad checks against me that I had to go in front of the judge and say, hey, you know, it wasn't me, which I had affidavits from the FTC and all them saying I was a victim. And it just grew in education of people. So I go and I talk to business owners and large corporations about the dangers of watching your back door, because even though you have some good IT people, there's always someone better and faster in a different part of the world that's going to sneak in the back door and steal thousands and thousands of people a day, and between the Russians and the Chinese and whoever else is in the world going on. So my job is to go in and educate, manage, and protect. That's my motto, and that's what I do. And it's rewarding. I was up in New York this past week with 45 IT ladies in a room, and it's amazing how intelligent these young ladies are, women are, and they're just on the front lines trying to help us all keep our sanity and keep our possessions, because it's if you think it's not going to happen to you, you're just fooling yourself. So,
if someone wanted to get in contact with you to learn more about what you do, how would they get in contact with you?
Just go to cyberimpact.com, excuse me. Cyberimpact.com. I'm on Facebook, and my corporate site is being redone, so it'll be back up probably by next month. But that's pretty much it. We have a good time with it, and we educate a lot of people, and hopefully people will listen to protect yourself and not lose what they have and work for all their life. So it's,
are you looking
it's
forward to coming
going
to
around.
Houston in September?
I love
and,
Houston.
And,
yeah. Actually, we're hopefully be moving back to Dallas here pretty soon, a new building in Dallas, and we'll be back home and spend more time with you guys, you know?
Great, great.
Just I appreciate what you do, because if you didn't do what you do, then, you know, everything would fall to the wayside and go away, and all the kids and my grandkids would go, oh, what was that? Who's that? Who's that? No. It's funny, my grandkids today,
there's three things I need from you. I need pictures from that chest that you said that you've got hundreds of pictures in. I want some hand-picked pictures from you. And then if you're in them, I want them autographed.
Yep.
Second thing is I want you to consider, and you don't – I mean, just consider it, please. I'd like to
– I know what you're watching. I know what you're asking.
Well, something that from Mr. Lewis is personal that you could pass down. That would be really cool. And then I don't know where it's at, but, man, I'd love to – you know, I've got Roger Green's checkered gi. I've got his gi. He gave it to me. It still has blood on it. Yeah, Roger Green gave me his checkered gi that he wore in all those tournaments, and it still has blood on it. So you still have your checkered gi?
I still have my checkered gi. This thing is probably 40-plus years old. Yeah, it's still a part of me. It's a hard thing to give up. I mean, I might consider
every September you'll bring me something very special, and when I induct you as a history general officially and you present it to me at the museum, that'd be really special.
Here's what I'll do for you. I mean, it means a lot to me. I know it means a lot to you. It means a lot to, you know, what you're doing. The belt that Joe gave me, it's sitting here on my wall. It came off of his body to onto me, and means a lot to me. But to preserve it and to put it where you need it to put it, I'd be glad to give it to you.
Wow, I'm national radio. You just made a Hawaiian cry. Thank you so much.
No, it would mean a lot for me to be in the right place because you know.
But you know what? I'm going to share this with my listeners that this is very special because last year, from Murderers Row and my dear friend Whit Wingerton and Mr. Gregory Duncan, his dad's belt, his OB was given to me, and then of course I've got June Reed's belt that passed down through Mike Stone and Alan Steen and J. Pat Burleson, and of course my instructor Jim Harrison. I have that. I'm looking at that as we speak. In fact, I'm touching it as we speak. And to add your belt that Mr. Lewis gave you to that collection, you know, people wonder what makes the Sport Karate Museum tick. What you just did makes it tick. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just means I've carried that thing. Those three belts, I got my first showdown belt when he tested me the first time. The second one, you know, that's the first. And
but you know what's going to be so special this weekend? I understand from Mr. Corley that Mr. Jerry Beasley, who – you know, we're very close for Mr. Lewis. In Atlanta this weekend, he's bringing Christina Lewis.
Oh, really?
His daughter.
Cameron?
And also
Cameron?
His son.
Cameron.
Also. So, his son and his daughter's going to be there in the battle, and he's going to be there to help. Because Christina was the first one to receive the Joe Lewis Eternal Award. And then the news I get to share with all the people that will be hanging out in the booth, what you're doing in that belt, I'm overwhelmed, Carl. You know,
I love to be there.
You're there in spirit. Believe me, you'll
be
there in spirit.
Yeah.
When I get done, everyone will know what you're doing. God bless you, man. I mean, I'm cyber hugging you right now. Do you understand? You can't breathe. I'm squeezing you so hard. Okay? Okay? You understand?
I appreciate
cool.
it, brother. Yeah,
cool.
I understand.
I appreciate you. Yeah.
Thank you for
doing a great show.
You did a great job.
And thank you so much for tonight and sharing with our listeners the great Joe Lewis legacy, and the reason why it's so special this weekend is the Battle of Atlanta, what Mr. Joe Corley is doing for all of us.
Well, Joe, you have to say something. Joe Corley is a great guy. He's always been a sportsman, always loved the arts. Great competitor back in his days, and he had long hair and everything else going on back in those days.
Yeah, he had long hair. Yeah, you remember.
Yeah, long hair and the beard and the whole nine yards going on.
You know what? He's still 39 years old. Realize that, don't you? He turned 39 forever. You know.
He wished.
He tells me that every day. I talk to him.
Joe's a good guy. I mean, he's done a lot for the sport, especially in the part of the world. And
he has.
Battle of Atlanta was, you know, I remember fighting that thing many years ago with students of mine, and Joe's a good guy. I mean, it has been a long time since I've seen him, but he's done a marvelous job, and my hat goes off to him.
If you listen, Mr. Corley, we love you. Carl and I both love you with all our heart, man. Thank you for the memories. And this weekend is your weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a good guy.
Carl, thank you again. And
thank
come
you,
back. I hope I'm on next year. I'll bring you back and tell about cybersecurity and what you've done to save the world. Okay?
I'll do my best. Thank you, sir.
Okay, little brother. I'll be in touch with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
everybody, for listening to our show tonight. We've been with Carl Napoleon and the protege of Mr. Joe Lewis. And we've had a great show. We got to introduce the Memoirs of America character that Dana Abbott created. And part two will be next week with our special guest, Soki Dave Johnson, who, by the way, is in Germany. We hope you're safe back to the mainland, as we call it, from Hawaii. But coming back to the United States, we'll be with Soki Dave Johnson next week in our radio show. On behalf of Hansi Jesse Bowen and the AMMA Masters Network radio blog, bless you guys. We love you for letting us come into your home. From the heart, mahalo, and aloha.